Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm PJ Doran.
And I'm Dave Sulecki.
This week, we'll be speaking with Brian Tuna Mullins, professional motorcycle racer.
MXGP at Tuchantel, Germany this weekend. The big news for me was just watching that the ending of the first moto. A lot of controversy. Prado cross-jumped over Herlings and took both of them out. So Prado, who won the moto, didn't line up for the second moto. So he actually fell off the leaderboard. And it was a big shakeup because what that allowed things to happen, Tim Geiser takes the points lead back over the Bullet. So Herlings is now in second. So the controversy never ends. I think probably tense moments in the pits at Team KTM over the weekend.
FIM going to hand out any penalties on that?
There's nothing been come down yet. But, you know, it's kind of early Monday, so I guess we're going to have to wait and see.
That's a big deal.
I thought so, too. And in the MX2 class, Maxime Renault, man, after his riding at the Motocross of Nations, he just looked hot. So just good to see him out front and jamming, and he just continues with the points lead. So not a lot of controversy in the 250 class, but that 450 class is going to come down to the wire, man. I'm really, really looking forward to the next few races.
Well, MotoGP, as we know, happened at COTA, Circuit of the Americas, Austin. Big, big news of the weekend was the resurgence of the cowboy, Marc Marquez. Just amazing performance by him. He's only lost one MotoGP event there ever that he has competed in. And with his injuries this year, Dave, it was kind of a question mark. Is he going to be as dominant at Circuit of the Americas as we've known him to historically be? And lo and behold, the guy showed up and did exactly what we all thought he might. Much to the chagrin of the rest of the field, he drove away right from the start and nobody even had a shot at him. The other big news, of course, was Quartararo, the points leader, finished ahead of his main rival, Bagnaia. That allowed him to stretch his points lead to 52. Now with three races to go on the season, potentially Quartararo could lock up the title at the next stop. That's a big deal. All he has to do is essentially finish ahead of Bagnaia, and that will seal the deal on the 2021 MotoGP title for him. What'd you think of that race?
I thought it was great. I watched every lap. What you said about Marquez, is he finally back? Can we finally say that? He's won two rounds now this year. And here's another interesting stat. Eight different winners in MotoGP this year, which is unheard of. Usually it's a one or two guys show and a lot of parity. But Marquez just, he loves riding the U.S., man. He looks good.
Yeah, and something about that track from the very first time he was there as a rookie in the MotoGP class, he's just been dominant at that facility. I hope he's back. I think he's got a lot more reality in him now than he's ever had in his life. He's advanced some number of years, and his competition continues to be 18 to 21, so they definitely are not letting him take anything for granted. I think he is definitely gained some confidence with that dominant win, though. There's no way he didn't.
Yeah, I got to think so. So I'm going to stamp it. Marquez is back, and watch these next few rounds.
Hopefully he doesn't hurt himself again. The other big race of the weekend was, of course, World Superbike from Portugal. Big news from that, Razgat Lioglu won the first race. As you know, we have race one, we have a super pole race, and we have race two. So there's 3-point scoring events on the weekend. Razgat Lioglu came in with a pretty good lead in the world title. After the weekend, he, because of a DNF in race two, he kind of gave Jonathan Rea a bit of a pass, and Rea was able to reel back some points. Now it's still a very healthy 24-point lead with two rounds to go. But again, he didn't finish race two, so it opened the door, and certainly this title looks like it could go down to the very last event.
Yeah. Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry, evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto today. Professional road racer Brian Tuna Mullins of Team 626 Pack. How you doing, Tuna? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, man.
What's the with the name Team 626 Pack? I would love to hear how that came about.
So there's this old Kenny Rogers movie, probably from the, mid-80s, early 80s even, I guess. He's just like this kind of washed up racer, and he's ends up with a crew of six orphans, I suppose, who tried to rob him. And then they end up traveling with him in this beat up RV going to all these races. So I got six kids, all girls. We used to have a beat up old RV. Now we got a decent one. But so we would go to all these races and we looked straight up like Kenny Rogers driving around. So we decided to, and that movie's called Six Pack. So we decided to, call the team 626 Pack since my number is 626.
Hey, and that absolutely plays after the racing's over too, right? You get a six pack in you. That is a perfect way to round out the weekend. How's your racing going, man? Last I saw you, we were at Barber. Things didn't go totally to plan.
No. Barber was literally and figuratively a wash. It rained the whole time. I felt pretty good on the bike. We made some changes, got the bike better. And it just, we had one dry session. It rained the entire time. On SVs, you kind of have to safeguard the front cylinder because it'll flood out and then it'll misfire. I took precautions, made a little water deterrent and like a little flap in front of the coil wire. And I also put a bunch of dielectric grease and RTV around the plug. And the bike was good all weekend until we went out for the siding lap of the race and it started misfiring on the front cylinder. And I was like, well, shit. So we had a restart because of a wreck and it just misfired. I ran the whole race on one cylinder, but I was too stubborn to pull in.
It's hard to be competitive in a 650 class when you're running the only 325, correct? It just limits your abilities, I would have to think.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't worried about corner exit there. There was no spinning up the wheel on that one.
So what else have you got going as we've now ended Moto America? I know you are by no means done riding. You're a consummate motorcycle rider. Are you doing other racing for the rest of the year, or is it just training, riding? What are you up to?
So we stay super busy, super busy. So the bike racing, you know, like you said, Moto America is over for the year. And I was on a WIRA endurance team for the year. That is over as well. Actually ended the weekend before Barber up at Summit Point in West Virginia. That ended not as good as we had hoped. We led the points probably, three quarters of the year. And we went in the last round 25 points ahead of Chris Parrish's team. And we ended up losing the entire championship by 1.4 points. We had to change a radiator a little past the halfway point, I guess. Another bike went off the track and spit up a slew of rocks, and our radiator caught one of them while I was out there. And came in, changed the radiator, and was back out in like 9 minutes, which I thought was pretty impressive. Then there, people started crashing and there were bikes all over the track. They red flagged it. And if we had three more laps, we would have won the championship. That's just not how it played out. So everybody did a good job. We did our best. It just didn't play in our favor.
That's why they call it racing and they count the points at the end. It stinks. It'll go your way next time, or at least that's what every racer hopes. You mentioned your six kids, Tuna, which is impressive in and of itself that some woman has tolerated you this long. to allow you to accumulate this many children. Are your kids into motorcycling with you at all, or is it something that's only dad?
No, they are. They've grown up around it. They've grown up in the garage and travel in the races since they were before they were born, technically. The 14-year-old now races cars. She's the oldest. And I race cars as well outside of bikes. Her younger sister, the 10-year-old, she races flat track bikes. She's still on a 50. They're not, you know, they do it for fun. They want to race because they're competitive kids. But, you know, we're out there just to have a good time. We're not really trying to tear up the world or anything. Her younger sister, the 8-year-old, she races bikes as well. The 6-year-old's not really into it. She used to be a ton until her throttle stuck. She didn't know to roll it back, and she went squealing through the backyard and bounced off a few things and hasn't ridden since. And then the 4-year-old, she has ridden. She's turned probably 50 or so laps in the backyard by herself. She's, you know, just kind of would rather climb a tree or play in the dirt or something. And then the baby is just not quite there yet.
So, Brian, I'm kind of curious. I mean, it's not often you get a guy with a nickname Tuna on your show, so I have to know the story behind the nickname. It's an interesting one, I understand.
Yeah. When I started racing, I didn't even ride a motorcycle till I was 21. And at this point, I'm 38. So when I was 21, I was racing go-karts at the time, some regional stuff, and was doing pretty well. Well, actually, I take that back. I was done go-kart racing. I was doing some arena cross stuff. Like, basically, I got a bike and I was like, yeah, motorcycles are cool. And then I had a buddy, Tony Brueggemann, and another friend, Adam Smith, were doing like arena cross stuff. And I was like, well, hell, I guess I'll buy a dirt bike and I will race too. And I didn't know anything about it, but I got a CR250, which is probably the wrong bike to start racing arena cross with. I did 2 seasons of arena cross, and some of my buddies, you know, I had this old Suzuki Katana at the time. It was a 94 and it leaked oil and it smoked, but you know, I tried to make it look cool, but it was a Katana, kind of looked like a dead fish. My buddies were doing track days, and I was like, well, cool. You know, there's this place where you can go and ride really fast and be rewarded for it instead of the streets. You know, people were getting hurt and losing licenses and whatnot on the street. So I went to one and only track day at Putnam Park and showed up with his Katana. And, you know, I didn't know much about bikes at the time. And so people were joking about it, and they're like, can of tuna. I went out first session. I was a novice, and they bumped me to intermediate after the first session. And then second session, went out in intermediate and did really well and came in at lunch break. They're like, we're going to bump you to advanced. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. And went out. And well, before that, even during lunch break, like all my buddies are like, this is awesome. And I didn't understand what the big deal was, really. You know, it's like, I'm just, you know, it's just another bike. And they're like, no, your bike's a piece of crap. It was like, you know, I was taken offense by it because I didn't realize how bad Katanas were as far as road racing worthiness. So everybody started calling me Can of Tuna, referring to that guy being me as Can of Tuna. We finished the day and it was a blast, made a bunch of new friends. And but I wasn't interested in track days. It was like, cool, I want to do this. I'm gonna go race. You know, how do I get my race license, all this? So the name stuck. It was Can of Tuna, you know, for the last 20 years. However many years since that track day, I was Can of Tuna, and I haven't had a Katana since. I sold that. So I sold that and got an old F2 race bike and started racing, and they still call me Tuna. It just kept going. So, you know, anybody in the motorcycle world called me Tuna. So then when I started racing cars, I was like, well, we'll just keep the name, keep the number. So now I'm Tuna to everyone but my family.
That's awesome. Every good nickname's got a great story behind it. And I love it when it's connected to a motorcycle. And speaking of motorcycles with nicknames, you've got a couple in your stable that I understand. One's called Little Wheezy. And that one I kind of understand because it's a little 500 cow. But tell me about Horse Titties McGee. That's the motorcycle I'm most interested in hearing about.
Oh, man. Is that on the Wira profile or is that the Moto America bike?
I think I found it on the Nelson Ledges Wira profile, yeah.
Horse Titties McGee or is it Squirrel Titties McGee?
I think it was Horse Titties, but I'm not going to argue with you, whichever.
Oh, man. So My buddy Pat, man, he passed away the year I started racing. Random act of violence, really sad story. He was crazy. He was an Irish dude. You know, his whole family had proud Irish heritage. And he would, you know, he drank, you know, not to be stereotypical, but he drank a bunch and he would just spout out random stuff. We'd be walking around. We'd be like at the store and he'd be like, "Hey, horse titties." And they'd be like, "Who the hell are you talking to?" And he's like, "I'm not talking to anybody. I'm just seeing what people do." You know, just weird stuff. Horse titties, squirrel titties, and anything McGee. He'd be like our friend Greg at the time. He always messed with him. He was a big guy and he sweated a lot. And he called him Neck Cheese McGee. And just random shit came out of this guy's mouth. So I was registering these bikes and like, it had a little section for a name. And I was like, you know, Little Wheezy will be the 500. And I was like, so the 650's got to have a name. And I went through some options and came up with whatever, Horse Titties or Squirrel Titties McGee, whichever one it was. I got another one. We got a new bike. We got a name now. So
I'm sure you'll be just as careful with the naming of it. Have you got plans? Now that you got a new bike, have you got plans for next year, Tuna? I mean, is it locked down or is it wait and see? Come Christmas time.
Oh, everything's up in the air always. As you can understand, six kids, we got parenting time. And so that my older two kids, they have a different mom. So we got court orders to follow and times to be here and there and everything. So racing is pretty haphazardly planned, to be honest. Molly, so my fiance Molly, the mom of the four youngers, she keeps everything in line and everything scheduled. And she just reminds me along the way. So we have, I'm still going to run endurance next year. I've told Greg, who's our team owner, that I would be on for it again. The Moto America bike I've been running is actually my buddy Jeff's, and he bought it off a friend of ours, John. And I've been riding that bike off and on just whenever they didn't want to ride it or they brought it along. We're like, "Hey, you want to ride this?" So pretty well set up bike. You know, it's a good super bike. I wouldn't say it's really Moto America caliber, but we run it anyways. So that bike, Jeff's building the house and I feel guilty for riding the thing. I'm like, because I think he rode it once this year on his own. Otherwise, it's just been around for me to ride. So it was like, you know, I don't want to keep riding your stuff. I was like, you know, why don't you sell it? I was like, if you want to sell it, let me know. I would be interested in buying it. So on the way back from Moto America, you know, the bike's on an open trailer getting rained on for the next 8 hours. I was like, you know, I'm going to take it home and go over it. And he's like, well, you know, about our talk, he's like, why don't you just buy it? And I was like, well, give me a price and tell me what comes with it and we'll go from there. So we agreed on it. And so the bike I've been riding the last couple of years, I'm actually going to purchase. You know, we made improvements on it since I've been riding it, but since it's mine, I'll have a little more incentive to sweeten it up a little bit.
Right on. Well, then we hope we get to see you out there in Moto America again. It looks like that class is absolutely going to carry on as it seems to be the most popular class in the paddock.
Yeah, man, it's not what I thought it would be. So, you know, I ran some AMA stuff back in the day. And when they announced this class, I was like, awesome. You know, that's something, it's fairly affordable. I can get into it. You know, they're machines that I like riding. You know, things happen. I decided not to do it the first year. And the rules package is a little bit funky. You know, it's a super bike class, but you can't build a true super bike because of the fuel controls and whatnot. You'll get a, you know, if you build a high compression engine, you get a lot of pre-detonation. And then the parts that are homologated that you can run, it's just not what I would typically build for the class. But so you end up like with this hybrid bike that's, you know, not a pure super bike, but not super stock by any means. So, but yeah, the classes, I kind of set that out until we were like, you know, they ran at Indy last year and I was like, yes, you know, that's close to my house. That track has so much heritage and history. I was like, we want to go to that one. So we did. And then we're like, well, we ran it. We ran mid-pack without much effort. Why don't we do it again? So that's how this year came about. And there's tons of grids, tons of new riders, tons of new teams going into that class. And, you know, I think it's kind of the bread and butter. You know, a lot of people want to do that. And it's actually attainable for the average guy.
Absolutely. And it seems to bring what I like about it amongst everything that I like about it is it brings young and old racers together. You've got guys on their way up. You've got established guys who aren't going anywhere but want to keep racing. I mean, honestly, that's what it seems like. And I think it's a good fit as you get young and old racers working together.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And you get the treachery of the old guys, and you get the lack of, not that it's a bad thing, but just lack of concern of what the possible outcome of the young kids. Because, you know, they're young. They don't care. They got to go to school with a broken arm. They don't, you know, it's no big deal. But, you know, regular working guys trying to go to work with a broken arm, broken leg or something, they got a mortgage to pay. It's a little something in the back of our minds. But it is great. It brings a lot of colorful conversation and paddock. Like, you know, there's some kids that were racing, you know, that I raced with their dads. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Tuna, it's unfortunately our time has gotten short because it's so easy to talk to you. Love talking to you. Want to give you a chance. Are there any sponsors that you want to give a shout out to or a thank you to?
So, I mean, as far as real sponsors, Jamie Daughtry with DMR Performance Suspension. He's out of Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's done my suspension for years. Super helpful guy. We actually got him. I was building a bike for Vintage Days just to play around on, and he had interest in riding it. He hadn't done a race since, like, I don't know, like 20 years or something, like 2003 or something. And he expressed interest in wanting to ride up there, and I was like, hell, I just built this bike. You did the suspension. Why don't you ride it? So he entered his first race in like 20 years up at Mid-Ohio at Vintage Days. Since then, I've built a few bikes to get guys started on, just cheap SVs. Jamie is, you know, the primary sponsor, and he just hooks me up on suspension work. And, you know, I guess Jeff for letting me ride his bike all year, Jeff Schuster. But as far as like real sponsors, I don't have any. You know, it's just my shop. I wrench on bikes in the evenings to pay for all the racing stuff. So I don't need any publicity for that because I don't have enough hands to do all the work.
You're already overrun with it. Well, Tuna, it's been a pleasure talking to you, a pleasure seeing you at multiple racetracks this year, and I can't wait to see you again, hopefully at a racetrack next season. Thanks for joining us today on Pit Pass, and good luck with the off season.
Yeah, thanks, man. You guys take care.
This week's moment in moto history, the United States 500cc Grand Prix motocross event took place annually at the Carlsbad Raceway beginning in 1973. This event was dominated by the European racers from the beginning, and it wasn't until 1980 when a U.S. rider won the event, and this happened in June of 1980. Privateer racer Marty Motes, he was the first American racer to win the event overall, even when the favorite was perennial GP racer Brad Lackey. So hats off to Marty and his first big career win for helping bring the U.S. into legitimacy on the world motocross stage. And it was great to see live. They used to broadcast that event every year from ABC's Wide World of Sports. And it was the one motocross race that you could catch on television every year. So we always look forward to it.
Yep. And I would imagine the popularity of that race probably led to further televised motocross and ultimately supercross races, it's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it was a touchstone moment, really, because that's when Americans really got taken seriously after that. And I think it was 1981 when they really started a run to dominate the world in motocross. And the sport came from Europe, and the Americans adopted it. And that was the turning point, I think, in motocross racing in the U.S.
And we still have, currently, MXGP round, correct? We recently returned to the MXGP circuit.
Yeah, they do move it around the country. They just had one here recently at Redbud, I believe it was. But they do move it around, and they have various displacement events in the country, but that's the main one.
In upcoming motorcycle racing news, we're going to have a World Superbike round at Argentina, October 15 through the 17. And American Flat Track will be going to the Charlotte Half Mile, October the 8th.
GNCC Racing returns for round 12 of 13 at the Buckwheat 100 in Newburgh, West Virginia, October 9th and 10th. The MXGP of France, round 12 of 18, will take place October 10th. Thank you again to our guests for being with us today, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you have a moment, please rate and review us. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit pitpassmoto.com where you can check out our blog. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Alverson, Chris Bishop, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow. I'm Dave.
And I'm PJ.
And we'll see you next week.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports-related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.